12.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Wow, you clicked play. Good for you. Good for me too. My name's Nkwa Sonye, and I am In My Bag. It's a podcast that incorporates sports, music, and tries to wrap it all up into one. I've tried to hide one side from the other for years, and yeah, that's not happening anymore. So, this is the prologue episode right before we get started with the regular series. So, it's a brief introduction, if you'd like to call it that. In today's episode, by the way, if you want to follow me on social media to sort of keep up with all of the happenings, I'm on Twitter at N_ASONYE on Twitter and on Instagram at _sometimesJR. Why is it like that? Ask me in the DMs. I'm not going to answer it here. In today's episode, college sports is being college sports again. Boots Riley may be hating on Spike Lee a little bit. And Wally Backman, for all my Mets fans, has lost his mind. But I'm going to begin this prologue episode with the Shinjuku skyline. Why, do you ask? Because I am literally recording in my Tokyo, Japan hotel room. I literally love this view. I'm about 13 floors up. I have seen buildings that architecturally blow my mind. Now, I've been overseas before, but this is my very first solo trip, and I have been beyond impressed. I've been beyond really grateful to have the opportunity to be out here and really see what life is like on the other side of the world. Now, I will warn those of you who are not native Japanese speakers, you might run into a little bit of trouble because I was able to run into a few people either in the service industry or even sometimes on the street that spoke a little bit of English. But for the most part, you have to be able to know where you're going. Google Maps and renting a Wi-Fi router, that's going to be your meal ticket when it comes to anything around here. But the variance in food, the culinary is just, it's unbelievable. If you think that Tokyo is all sushi and ramen, those places are everywhere. Do not get me wrong, but you really have to try and get out here and just see what this city is like. Now, for those who know a little bit about me, baseball is pretty much my thing. I would call it my thing, at least. So there is absolutely no reason why I would not come out here and try to see a baseball game. Baseball culture in Japan is different from nearly any other country in the world. The only other place I would love to go see a baseball game is Cuba, because, I mean, come on. More than 20% of the major leagues is Cuba. Do not quote me on that number. I didn't look that up. But just being out and seeing how this game was. So because of my timing wasn't exactly the greatest, of course, I got to the ballpark during the first inning. I missed first pitch. Sue me. I get there. Vladimir Valentin, former Cincinnati Red, he hit a homer. That's where all the noise came from. I figured that out after I stepped inside. But as I sort of navigated the outskirts of the ballpark before I went inside, the team shop is actually not in the stadium. So the way that Meiji Jingu Stadium is built, all the culinary stuff is pretty much on the ground floor around the stadium. And the team shop is actually outside the stadium. And that's where re-entry becomes really cool, because you can leave the ballpark during the game, go to the team shop, either right underneath the stadium or a couple of the team sponsored trailers with, you know, shirts and ornaments and noisemakers and stuff like that. That's a little bit more toward the entrance. And by the entrance, picture this. When you pull up outside Meiji Jingu, there, don't ask me where parking is because I took a cab. I didn't want to play any games with public transit. But when you walk in, it's like an overarching gate and you see the stadium a little bit off to your left, and to the right, you have some of the trailers, some food trucks. It's just a really immersive experience. And of course, I bought two jerseys and a snapback. I have absolutely no shame about it whatsoever. I bought one for Ballantine and I bought another one for Norichika Aoki, former Kansas City Royal, who's now playing back home in Japan. But anyway, I have a little trouble finding my seat, but I get there and the whole place is nearly split in half. There are not a lot of sporting events where you see the fan bases evenly matched, but they played the Hanshin Tigers this weekend. So one side was nearly fully yellow and black on one side. And on the other side, where I chose to sit, where the Swallows were, the Swallows have two colorways. They either have red, white, and dark blue, or they have green and navy blue. It was peppered all throughout the section I was sitting in. By the way, for the jerseys I got there, I got both colorways. I ended up wearing one of them midway through the game just because I wanted to fit in. But nevertheless, the whole environment, it's like one big party. For each side, there are songs for every batter. There's a band playing a song for every batter. And when it gets loud, it gets really, really raucous. And the game that I went to in question, it had a couple homers on the home team side. And Hanshin was down 8-2 near around the fifth inning. But then they started clawing back. By the time it got to the top of the ninth inning, they were down 8-5. They had loaded the bases with nobody out. Hanshin had, keep in mind, the team had been battling back, but Hanshin, every single time, their supporters got louder and louder and louder. And funny enough, it seemed to sort of spur their team on. Big hits, they got really, really loud. And the other side, I was sitting on the home team, the Swallow side, and they kind of seemed a little shook, like, what in the world is going on? So it's sort of like an eternal battle back and forth, back and forth. The energy was there the entire night. It was so much fun. So to take you back to the top of the ninth inning, bases are loaded, nobody out. 8-5, Hanshin has the tying runs all on base, potential go-ahead run at the plate. Now the closer on the mound has 20 saves to his credit. He coaxes a full count pop-up in foul territory and then gets an inning-ending double play. Mayhem. Like literal mayhem. It was a lot of fun because I've been around baseball for quite some time and I've never seen an environment like this. Truth be told, I've yet to see a Major League Baseball game that has this sort of energy in the regular season. Both these teams are hovering around 500. And yet they cheered as if it was the playoffs. If I ever got a chance to come back here for the playoffs and get a seat, it would be incredible. Just make sure that you do all of your shopping for food. I didn't go to the ballpark for food, but that's because I spent most of my money on merchandise. I regret absolutely nothing. But yeah, if you get a chance to come to Tokyo and baseball's your thing, check it out. Even if baseball isn't your thing, I think you owe it to yourself to see a game. I've already purposed that the next time I get a chance to come out here, I will see a Yomiuri Giants game. The Tokyo Giants, for those of you who are like, what in the world is Yomiuri? But the Tokyo Giants have been the most famous team on this side of the world for quite some time. Some of your favorite Major League Baseball players that spent some time here for the NPB, the Nippon Professional Baseball League, they've gone through and they've played in the Tokyo Dome. That's a really special place. So my next time, I'll get to see it. Unfortunately, I didn't get to today. But honestly, staring at Tokyo's, at least part of Tokyo's skyline right now, yeah, no complaints. Not a bad time. Now to bring it back stateside.
What'd he say? He never even looked at you. He never even looked at you.
You're done, Tokyo.
For what?
So jet lag does really weird things to your body. It'll have you up at nearly 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, just scrolling through Facebook because your body just won't go to sleep. You know it's dark outside. You know you should be sleeping. That's when I came across a video of Wally Backman. Now, let's backtrack for a second for my resident Mets fans who some have probably hoped that Wally Backman would manage the team forever. Others are just tired of hearing his name mentioned in every single Mets rumor since 2002. Anyway, back in 2007, he was the manager of a minor league team called the South Georgia Peanuts. Why does that matter? Because there's a video that's just come up circulating about one of the funniest ejections I have ever seen. I'll put the link in the description so that you can go check it out for yourself. But I think it's hilarious. Simply hilarious. I've always been here for manager ejections because that's the one part of the game that's like not really ruled by anything. Baseball has always been a game of social conservatism. Don't flip your bats after home runs. Don't show up your opponent by fist pumping after an emotional moment and a strikeout, unless it's the playoffs or the World Series. Stop it. Nobody cares. Let the players have fun. I'll tell you right now, the game I saw in Japan, the players were having fun. Bat flips, cheerleaders, like the culture of the game is just so much different. But I've said enough about baseball somewhere other than the U.S., at least for right now. Here comes Wally Backman, and he is letting his umpire have it. Now, for those who aren't all that familiar with the way minor league baseball umpiring works, for the most part, at most levels, there are only two umpires. So there was the home plate umpire and then the field umpire. I assume the field umpire was the crew chief because he kept getting in the way, and Wally Backman is letting him have it. The language is a little too salty for me to put any clips of that here, but I'll tell you what, I will play for a manager that'll do that for me any day of the week. Like, I'm somebody that appreciates when someone stands up or has my back. I feel like if you don't have my back, my commitment sort of wavers a little bit. It's like, are you sure? Because if you're not going to have me, and if I can't do what I feel like I need to do, then we can reevaluate things. But my man Wally Backman ran out of the dugout, and then after letting the home plate umpire have it, saying, oh, you can read in my report, which I think is a really bad cop-out anyway, Wally Backman, son, goes into the dugout and flings out every bat, lets loose the whole bucket of balls, and on his way out and says, by the way, none of the players are picking that up at all. To be fair, this video is an old one. It's pretty obvious if you watch it because it's from 2007. Like, you see the video quality and everything. I just really got a kick out of the fact that that made circulation now because somebody scoured the internet and said, hey, that's Wally Backman. Hey, he was a Met, a legendary Met. In my opinion, if you win a ring in New York, I don't care if you're a bench warmer. You are at least somewhat legendary. And Wally Backman is no different, especially since he's gotten into the headlines with not so great reasons. But I digress. Manager ejections are fun. And it's nice to have a little bit of blast from the past, even if the video was from 10 years ago. But go check it out. Leave your comments because I had a ball. I had a ball. This is always a really weird subject for me because personally, I really love college sports. It's not just about the pageantry. Yes, it exists. And it's not just about seeing kids who may never play professionally really give their all for a sport that they truly, truly care for. It's that the community of people that work not just in front of the camera, in a sense, but behind it. It's not just the coaches, but it's the trainers, it's the ticket takers, it's the student managers, it's everybody involved, and it's a really, really, I think it's very special. Which is why sometimes when I critique it and have things to say, it gets weird for me. Because a lot of it I can't control. But I also recognize when things need tweaking and sometimes flat out overhauling. And the amateurism of the players involved, it's been beat like a dead horse. But that is really the main focus for a good reason, because I look at two big stories from this past week. First, the tragic, tragic death of Jordan McNair, and the absolute mind-boggling negligence of the University of Maryland to properly handle its business. Now, I use that word intentionally because I don't care what anyone else wants to say about college sports, because yes, from what I opened with, the relationships are all important, but it's also a business. And people make livings off of that, except for the players, which I still don't get. Say whatever you want about the free education. They put more in manpower, man hours, all of it. They put more in than the regular students that you're crying for. Sorry. They get free room and board while they pretty much, especially for the big sports, while they keep the doors open. Your favorite athletic director can afford to make millions of dollars a year because the men's football and basketball teams are bringing in bank. In fact, some of the SEC schools, because I know some of y'all want to just say, oh, well, women's sports will take a big hit if you start to pay the players. The women's sports are not just outperforming, but in some places they're outdrawing High University of Connecticut. But let's get back to the matter at hand. And it goes to the fact that the University of Maryland treated these players as they valued that they were amateurs. They didn't treat them like the soon-to-be draft picks that they want to put up and put on these press releases. Nah, to DJ Durkin and his staff, Jordan McNair was just an out-of-shape lineman. And the fault is on everybody at the University of Maryland because you hired him. And I'm quite sure that the expose that ESPN put out, that's not the first time that the administration has heard complaints about his behavior. Yes, parents complain, but at a certain point, there's going to be a pattern, and it's at least worth looking into. And a young man died on your watch. And then it takes 2 months to call a press conference to blame it all on the training staff. Now, I watched the press conference live, and at first, I was like, oh, good, the language is strong. It matters. But then you started to hear that turn where the fact that our training staff could not pick up what was going on was unacceptable. I said, wait. This is not about the training staff. It's literally not about the training staff, because the training staff, like it or not, is always at the behest of the head coach. Doesn't matter what sport. Usually the training staff doesn't even come out unless it's very, very drastic or the head coach says, nah, something's wrong with you. Go see the trainer. So especially when it comes to football, where there are more deaths during practice than any other sport, you now have a coach who has pushed his players mentally and, quite frankly, inhumanely. Because you can push, but there are certain things that you just don't do. The expose is on ESPN. You can go find it and just look through it, because it baffles me that these are the kids that end up putting butts in the seats. DJ Durkin has a track record. Nobody comes to the games to see DJ Durkin. Nope. When Randy Edsall was the head coach at Maryland for that disastrous term before he went back to UConn, where he never should have left in the first place, nobody came to see him. They came to see Stephon Diggs, who ended up winning the NFC semifinal for the Vikings this past year. So for all these people that make arguments that all the players should be grateful for what they have, the free gear, the practice, the travel, and then the small stipend, they should be happy and grateful. Like, no. Like, this is physical. This is life to them. The majors that you want them to be total student athletes, their sport won't let them take the majors that some of them want. And that's because when you're there, they say student athlete, it's really athlete student. Have your grades just high enough to stay eligible. And then be on your way. And these are the kids that you want to come back and give back to the program. Okay. Meanwhile, Duke is having a national tour that ESPN is putting everywhere. They are streaming exhibitions. Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett have probably already sold a bunch of jerseys. Whether it's at the school store, whether it's off the online store, those two 18-year-old kids will put butts in the seats. Cameron Indoor, I would argue, is probably the top 10 toughest place to get a ticket in all of America, just because of what Mike Krzyzewski has done at that school. That's one program where you might actually say, okay, I want to see him coach. Just a handful of programs. But as much as you come for Coach K, you know that he has a couple NBA lottery picks on his team. So it works hand in hand. And guess what? Those kids aren't getting paid. At least as far as you know. Or at least as far as I know. But it's amazing to me that these 18 to 22-year-old men and women can bring so much attention to a school, can bring so much pride to a school, and yes, bring a lot of money to their respective schools. And yet they're just amateurs, quote unquote. Yeah, okay. The truth is, we'll still follow it. College sports has forever been a problematic fave, and it will continue to be. All of our faves are problematic in one way or another. Institutions, people, teams, whatever. But I think we should start to have real conversations about what this all means for the young men and women involved. That's all. All I know is if I was Maryland in their shoes off of this investigation, I would honor scholarships and say, let's take the first couple games off. Of course, everyone would go nuts because, oh, there was a lot of money sunk into this. And I understand that. But at this point, this team has lost a teammate and is likely going to lose their head coach. The news has just come out that the Board of Trustees wants to clean house. President, AD, coach. So we'll see where that ends up by the time this is published. But I'll tell you right now, that team, my prayers and my heart goes out to the Terrapins football team, because that's just so much. That's so, so much. And it's a really, really deflating culture. Like, I understand that football, you have to be tough. You can't afford not to be tough. If you're not tough, it could be life or death. No funny. And now all of a sudden, you have a team. You say whatever you want about, oh, they need to be tough, they need to be strong. You know what makes you stronger? Rest. Your favorite trainers maybe don't tell you that, but I'm going to tell you. Rest. I don't know what they've been doing the past couple of weeks, because physically you have to stay in it one way or another. But truthfully, they just need to find a way to reset. And it'll be interesting to see how Maryland moves forward. But hey, that's the game, I guess.
And anyone else, really, that doesn't have pure white Aryan blood running through their veins. I'm happy to be talking to a true white American.
God bless white America.
I got a chance to see Black Klansman last week, and I'll be honest, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was very captivating. I feel like in some junctures, it made its point in terms of how racism really works in our society and telling the, air quotes used here, true story of Ron Stallworth. And especially since the videos have been going out and there's been more word about Ron Stallworth coming out and telling his story about infiltrating the KKK as a member of the Colorado Springs Police Department. All of that seemed really good and really heroic. I could tell that even though it said it's based on the true story, there were some things that were obviously a little far-fetched that were done for theatrical purposes. And that's cool. That's what creativity is all about. It's about taking certain liberties just in order to tell an overarching story. However, things got very interesting when Boots Riley, director of another summer hit, Sorry to Bother You, took to Twitter. And there will be pretty much from here on out, if I'm referencing something, either you got to do the work or I'll probably leave links. But for something like this, people have been talking about Boots Riley's comments for a while now. So I'm pretty sure you can find it and do some work for yourself. But Boots brought up quite a few inaccuracies with the real story of Ron Stallworth's infiltrating the police department, and also sort of juxtapose that alongside, you know, the really tenuous relationship that Black people in this country have had with law enforcement and the Black men and women that are a part of that particular field. Now, don't get me wrong. I never watched Black Klansman with the idea that, oh, wow, this is how it can really work. But I think Boots made some pretty solid points, especially when it came to understanding what the police force's role was when the FBI got involved in terms of their relationship. Basically, based on Boots' letter, which is backed up by history, the FBI would use local police forces to sort of control the Black liberation movements of the time, the Black Panthers and things of that nature. And he also brought up a few factual inaccuracies when it came to Kwame Ture's portrayal in the movie as well. Like I said, I think all of that was stretched to make a point. But he brought up something really, really interesting. He thought it was very intriguing that Spike Lee sort of reinforced this whole, yay, the system works sort of storyline. I think for this particular movie, it had to be that way. And here's why. Speaking personally, I'm not someone who's going to sit through one of those back in the day, hard slavery times movies, discrimination. I don't sit well with that. It really just makes me upset and angry. And don't try to say, hey, I want to go see a really great movie. Cool. Let's go watch Selma. That's not it. It's important, but that's not something I would watch for leisure. It's something I'd watch because I felt like it was important for me to see it and be exposed to it. But for this particular movie, because it was so heavily based in literally fighting white supremacy and doing what they can to dismantle it, it sort of needed that quasi happy ending. I'm not going to give too many spoilers about the movie. You'll have to go see it for yourself and come to your own conclusions. But what I thought was really very interesting in Boots' breakdown is that he truly sees that the Black nature of trying to work in those spaces was very precarious in the 1970s because you couldn't really afford to be more outspoken and say, you know what? There are some points to these platforms. Instead, you sort of had to fall in line or you wouldn't have a job. And let's be honest. Everybody has to eat. I don't care what you say your values are. One way or another, somebody has to eat. And frankly, I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to do good in this world. But I don't know. I just felt like it was really very interesting to sort of play with the mental acrobatics after the fact. Because the truth of the matter is, I was never going to watch this movie and say, oh, this is realistic. Oh, everything is great now. That's not what life, period, is like, much less in America. Because you could sort of see the duality of Stallworth played brilliantly by John David Washington, by the way. I mean brilliantly. Ricky from Ballers done come up. But that being said, you could sort of see the internal struggle that Stallworth in the movie had to deal with. And I was really intrigued by his turnaround. And it really wasn't much of one, but it was enough where I said, okay, he did learn something here and that matters. But I hated the fact that, you know, the calls that were made on his mental toughness were not his. And I'm being pretty purposely vague because I don't want to do too many spoilers. But trust me, there are going to be some spots in the moment, especially his interactions with the police chief, where you sort of go, wow, this is extremely misguided. And it's obvious that it's misguided. I guess that's sort of the point. But Spike Lee has never been one to care what people think. He just makes it and says, all right, that's your call. I'm just a man from Brooklyn. I said what I had to say. So if you're interested in seeing at least a very thought-provoking movie, laughing a little bit, I say go see it. But definitely do your best to draw your own conclusions, not just about what Boots Riley had to say, because I think, hate him, love him, think he's controversial, whatever, he made some really solid points. And there was a reason why he said that, because he doesn't want this work of art, which it is, to be taken to a point where people apply it way too liberally to real life. And I appreciate that aspect. But yeah, go see the movie. Go draw your own conclusions. It's, trust me, it's a good 2 hours and 15 minutes. It won't be a waste. Listen, it's been a blast, and I thank you so much for listening and tuning in to In My Bag. It's really a mix of everything, so I'm glad you got a chance to stick around for all of it. Listen, this is a call to action for all of my creatives. So for weekly episodes, I'm trying to get one creative a week to come in. We'll talk. And then I would like to encourage a performance of some sort. So if music is your thing, if writing is your thing, if spoken word is your thing, visually, I don't know how we'll make it transition to audio, but I'm not afraid to try at all. Feel free to reach out to me on social media. I'm at @N_ASONYE on Twitter, on Instagram, @_sometimesJR. I really have a thing for underscores with these things. It's kind of annoying, but I'd love to reach out and try to get you to do something per week. Do not hit me up for phone interviews. That's not the point. I'm not against traveling. If you're in the New York City area and you want to stop by, we'll work out the details in terms of, you know, where, when. I bring all my own equipment, and it'll make everything, I think, pretty smooth for the most part, just to have the opportunity to sit down and chat for hopefully about 15 to 20 minutes. And it doesn't just have to be about sports either. It can be about, you know, what's been going through your head. It's really an open door for you to come in and just talk and chat and then put something on. It could be an acoustic performance. It'd be cool for my spoken word artists. If you have music in the background, that can definitely be provided. This, it's an open canvas. And why not? If it's something that you'd really like to do, feel free to reach out and we'll find a way to make it happen. Listen, thanks again for taking the time. I will see you next week. When this drops, there will be info about when it'll happen more frequently, because I do have to deal with hosting and figuring out how soon it'll take for things to be cleared by iTunes, by Spotify, all that sort of stuff. But once that gets sorted out, the information will go out. Stick to the IG and the Twitter. That's how everything's going to go out for the most part. As we move forward, I'll add more outlets for sure. But I'm really looking forward to really starting this season, starting this journey with all of you. So thank you for tuning in. And I like to try and leave you with a quote. It'll probably be sometimes different week to week. Actually, no, it needs to be different from week to week, because that'll just get annoying. And I'm not going to hear anybody saying, oh, he's a biter. Nah, I don't do that. But I do like to borrow. And I will cite when necessary. So, and for the record, if it is going to be a Bible verse, you'll be all right. But to quote the great Bomani Jones, when this goes up on iTunes, leave 5 stars. If you leave 4, you're probably a hater. Peace out. See you later.